This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I am joined, as always, by my man, Mike Luciano. Mike, it is good to be back, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm feeling pretty good now that the dynamic duo is back. Justin is back from a two-week vacation to Malaysia and Indonesia. So, world traveler over here. We were talking about it before the show. It was pretty good. We're not going to do a whole vacation slideshow of that, because that would not be entertaining podcasting.
Dude, I had a whole PowerPoint prepared. Are you serious?
And this is when I went to here.
Every photo from my trip.
Old school on a projector. Yeah. So at the risk of doing that, let's just say that Justin did a nice Lewis and Clark example and went all over Kingdom Come. And found some pretty interesting stuff. I'd say he almost died, but he clearly did not die. So.
But I didn't. So it's okay. Look,
up to there. I mean, he was... Bob Dylan was playing Knock on Heaven's Door, and he said, "No, Bob Dylan, I have to live." And then
there may have been a little bit of a run-in in an Indonesian jungle, but I made it out. I'm all right. I'm here. I think the same, so that's good. You know, I'm in one piece.
It's just like such secret agent. Like, I was trapped in an Indonesian jungle. Like, that's what it sounds like.
I think I like saying it that way because it makes it sound. I don't even know. I don't know if it sounds cooler or lamer, but I didn't die. I don't think I died, Brian. I'm pretty sure. I think there was a point during that experience where I was like, maybe I am dead. I'm not sure.
But this is some invasion of the body snatchers situation.
Yeah.
Here. By the way, big shout out to Mike Giaraputo, who a lot of you saw last week, guest host the Jet Press with me. He did a fantastic job. Really, thank you so much for filling in, Mike. And he's a good kid. Good radio presence. Good podcaster. Might see a little more of him eventually.
We had two Mike Italian last names.
Oh yeah, we made a point of that on the schedule release thing about we were Italianing it up a little bit. So let's tone down the Italianness here and let's just talk some Jets football. Before all that, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on all those sites, and we're on YouTube at the Jet Press. If you want to support the show, you can do it with likes, you can do it with subscriptions. Those are the two ways you can really sort of bump us up and get more eyeballs on this show. So let's dive into the dog days of late spring, early summer, because now is the time when OTAs are starting, because the rosters are mostly finalized, barring one or two little moves here or there. And the Jets are going into the season with, in my opinion, a better roster than last year, probably more Super Bowl expectations than last year, because a lot of their big holes have been filled. And Aaron Rodgers, of course, at the center of it all. A lot of guys spoke at OTAs, but Rodgers, I think, obviously the most prominent. So the first couple questions were obviously nothing to do with football, because this guy, Mr. No Distractions, his own words, was flirting with the vice presidential run for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is not going to win, so it would have been pointless. So... Tell me I'm wrong. Either Biden or Trump's going to win. So
I didn't say
one of those two is going to win, not RFK. So plus,
are you spoiling the elections?
I you know what? You can call me a spoiler. If it's minus 10,000 odds on one of those two, take it. So
fair.
Rodgers would have completely blown up everything the Jets were going for, because he said he would have had to retire if he was going to go through with this. He did not. I'm happy about that. I'm happy to hear him actually talk football, because when he wants to actually talk about football and talk about a team, there's less like, oh my God, shut up. You don't hear that as much, or you don't do that as much, rather. It's a lot. Okay, I actually like what this guy's bringing to the table. He's a good salesman. And he got me excited about the offense. He got me excited about some of the new pieces. I know Hackett's there, but now that I know he's committed, I'm feeling good now. I can say it now again, Aaron Rodgers is my quarterback. I know he was only my quarterback for four plays the last time, but if he plays longer than that, he's given me a pretty good feeling about how the season's going to go.
Yeah, look, I don't want to be the guy that white knights for Aaron Rodgers or, you know, defends him and shields him from all criticism and stuff, but I will say this. Aaron Rodgers, since the day that he got to New York, to Florham Park, has been all in on the Jets. He's made that clear with his words and his actions. I know there's all the off-field stuff and all the unnecessary distractions and the annoyances. And yeah, he'll say some things that you might not agree with. And I certainly don't agree with everything that he says. But in terms of what he's done as a leader and a teammate, I think it's exceeded my expectations. And I'd say it's at least lived up to, if not exceeded, the Jets' expectations as well. Because, you know, he's someone who had a reputation in Green Bay for not always being the best leader and not always being the best teammate in terms of mentoring young guys and just being there and showing up for OTAs and doing all the voluntary stuff. There was definitely a time in Green Bay where it kind of shifted and he stopped doing all that stuff. So it's been really nice to see him come to New York, to come to the Jets and be all in on this team. And, you know, it's not just his words, because, you know, he can say what he wants, but it's his actions. It's him showing up to OTAs. It's him not only being at OTAs, but, you know, there's numerous examples of even during Tuesday's open media practice of him taking guys aside and kind of taking them under his wing, whether it was Jordan Travis or Zach Kuntz. Like there were multiple guys he was speaking to just on the
side. Malachi Corley's living with him, for crying out loud.
Malachi Corley. I mean, he's offered Malachi Corley his guest house. Like that speaks volumes. And I think it goes beyond, you know, what people see in the media. And obviously that's Rodgers brings upon himself. I think we can all agree on that, but it's nice to see him all in. And, you know, the RFK stuff was wild. That was definitely wild. It was just another chapter in this organization's just storied history of silliness, is how I could put it. But
I did like how we say, well, if I'm bad, everybody's fired. Like, that's setting the stakes. He knows what's up this year.
It is setting the stakes. And as much as I believe we did talk about the RFK stuff on the show when it was happening, I don't think he seriously considered it. You know, I don't think he did. I don't think he hit the
quota of hours without an ESPN segment. And he said, right. I know what I'll do to get my name back out there.
Right. And I'm sure, like, look, he obviously thinks very highly of RFK. You could think whatever you want about that. But if somebody that you think highly of offers you a political position, I understand at least, you know, contemplating it or whatever. But I don't think that he ever seriously considered leaving the Jets. It does sound like he is not only all in on the Jets, but all in on football. And that's all you can ask for the guy. He's going to say the things that are dumb sometimes, right? He's going to say some controversial things. He's going to make headlines for off-field reasons. But when it comes down to football, I'm just happy that he's here. I'm happy that the Jets have a future Hall of Fame quarterback. And I'm happy he's at OTAs and doing all the right things there. So that's really just my biggest takeaways from this. You know, you can say what you want about Aaron Rodgers as a person, and for, you know, you could say what you want about his beliefs and his opinions, and I might agree with a lot of those things that you're saying. But as far as him being a teammate and a leader, he's been there and he's doing his part. So I gotta at least give him props there.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here's what I want to say to Aaron Rodgers and a lot of guys that get into the realms of conspiracy that he gets into. So if there's all these big conspiracies out there that are influencing, you know, the American way of life and the global order and this and that, so they have this big plan to, you know, take over all this and sneak it right under people's noses, and yet they left just enough breadcrumbs for a 41-year-old quarterback.
Hey, 40. He's not 41.
40, soon to be 41 to figure it all out. Wow, these guys must have really made a mistake, because apparently Aaron Rodgers saw through everything and they perfectly laid it out for him, and no one else has seen it. Why am I the only one seeing it? Well, if you're the only one seeing it, Aaron Rodgers, maybe that'll tell you something. So let's get on to guys who don't necessarily dabble in the Twilight Zone or the realm of such weird and out of left field tangents, sure, political or otherwise. Robert Saleh, because he spoke. Because he's the coach, and you're supposed to speak. And we spent a good portion of last show talking about Nathaniel Hackett, because the Jets tried to hire an offensive coordinator to replace Hackett, but Hackett would still be the OC, but he wouldn't call the plays. It's a weird thing, because Hackett now is in a role where he simultaneously has no job security, theoretically, because nobody thinks he's good. And he's going to get fired if everybody's bad. So you have that. And also the most job security, because he's so terrible that they're willing to hire people to take all his responsibilities away from him, and they still won't fire him. So Saleh goes on, you know, one of these tangents, and he says that Hackett's still going to be the primary play caller. And then he says a really money quote that I really didn't like, because – I don't have as many complaints about Saleh as a lot of the Jets fans do, but one of my main complaints is the tough guy, not persona, but he has all this all gas, no break mantras. And then development wise, or talking to guys, it's a lot of kitty gloves and talking around people. He says of Hackett, quote, "You're always going to experience growth," saying that this was like a learning experience for Hackett. He was a head coach, and he was an offensive coordinator forever. How old is Nathaniel Hackett?
46. I don't know. That's my guess.
Even you know, he's 44.
44.
He's okay. 44, and he's been an NFL coach except for 3 years when he was in college, because he went to Syracuse. He's been an NFL coach since 2006. Learning experience, growing. That wasn't what that year was. That was incompetence. Hey,
you're never too old to keep growing. You should continue to grow.
Yeah, I know that. I know that's all you can ask of somebody, is to try and to get better. But I mean, what are we doing here? We're not playing Pop Warner at 12 years old. I don't want to sound too hokey, but I mean, you got to have higher standards for an offensive coordinator. This isn't a new analyst you brought on and he did some things wrong and he messed some things up. That happens. 26, 27, 28-year-olds, they churn in and out. That's the bedrock of the league, are those guys. I get all that. This is a 44-year-old coach. How many people report to Hackett? A bunch. Position coaches, players. Well, it's room to grow. That's the biggest problem, man. And I like a lot of the stuff Saleh said. As Brian comes in with the money line, here goes being party number one for Hackett. Well, and Saleh and Douglas, too. We're run by a bunch of bald men. Run the Jets.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that if that's your style. Some people don't look great on, but if that's genetics. Your style.
It's genetics, man. You can't blame them for that.
So that was really my only problem. Other than that, there's a lot of stuff I liked from Saleh about how this team looks, and Rodgers is doing good. Now people are responding to him. Like, I got a good vibe from Saleh. Probably a better vibe than I got last year, where it seems like there was a lot of deference to Aaron and just fawning over Aaron a lot. Like, I think he's a little more in control this year. They even said he's going to have a bigger role in the offense, which I like. But man, those Hackett quotes just stick out to me. Those are just things that don't sound right. You could take a bigger role in the office. You could do whatever, but that's the quote that stands out. And unfortunately, it's the one I had a problem with, as opposed to the 10 other ones I didn't really have a problem with, but I just can't get it out of my crawl.
See, to me, I always find it hard to get worked up about coach speak, you know, like about just quotes from press conferences. I really
get worked up about, like, not lying, but when you twist yourself in 8 different knots to defend things like
what this. Is he supposed to say? What is he supposed to say? That Hackett did an incredible job last year? Because you're
a situation for all of us.
Okay. I mean, it's kind of what he's – I mean, he's literally just saying, like, oh, last year – he's reading between the lines. He's saying Nathaniel Hackett and the offense were not good enough last year. It was a learning experience, and hopefully we'll be better this year. That's what he's saying. I have no issue with him saying that. We all know why Nathaniel Hackett is the offensive coordinator. If it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers and they were just keeping Nathaniel Hackett out of incompetence, I would have more issues with Robert Saleh is saying. But Robert Saleh's hands are tied. Like, Saleh
does tried to replace him, and then they kept him anyway. That to me says that they're not satisfied with him, and they're still bending over backwards for him.
They're not bending over. They're bending over backwards for Aaron Rodgers. They are doing whatever they can to try and help Nathaniel Hackett. They don't necessarily want him to be their play caller. I think that's been made abundantly clear. There just wasn't anybody that was willing to take that job because I didn't get to talk about this last week because I know you guys talked about it on the show, but it's so funny. Like, when I saw that report, literally I was on vacation and saw the report and I'm like, guys, come on. Can we just not do this?
Ran up like thousands of dollars in roaming fees to see that report.
I'm like, what is this garbage? but I it's so funny to think about, like, what would that role have even been? Like, senior offensive coordinator? Because it doesn't sound like they would have demoted Nathaniel Hackett. Like, I'm pretty sure he would have remained the offensive coordinator. He just wouldn't have been the play caller.
What would the play caller be?
Right. So would they have been like the senior offensive coordinator? I have no idea what that would have been. And I can understand why nobody would wanted to take in that position. But I don't have any issue with Robert Saleh saying whatever he has to say about Nathaniel Hackett. We all know why he's here. The quotes are meaningless. What matters to me more, honestly, the part that stood out to me and that actually means something is Robert Saleh getting more involved with the offense, which is something that I think Woody Johnson alluded to earlier in the offseason. And, you know, it's something that Saleh's going to have to do, because if you're a head coach in this league for a long time, you cannot just only focus on one side of the ball. You can't do it. For as much of an offensive genius as we claim Kyle Shanahan is, and we believe he is still involved on defense in a little bit. It's not just the defensive coordinator. It's not just, you know, two head coaches, like the head coach of the offense and the head coach of defense. If you are a long-term head coach in the NFL, you do have to get involved on both sides of the ball. Now, obviously, Robert Saleh is one of the best defensive minds in the NFL. Even his staunchest of critics should agree with that notion that he is a great, great defensive mind and has proven to be a really good defensive coordinator. But to be a very good head coach, you have to do a little bit of both. And in this situation, they streamlined the offensive coaching staff. They got rid of some guys, didn't bring in, you know, a bunch of replacements. They got rid of Rob Calabrese. They do not have a quarterbacks coach now. It's going to be Todd Downing doing that, essentially filling that role. So I have no issue. And in fact, I'm happy to see Robert Saleh at least having a little bit more input on offense, because I think a lot of times you see that disconnect when it comes to the personnel decisions too, because the reason the defense is such a well-functioning, you know, or well-oiled machine, and it functions so well, is because a lot of those personnel decisions come from Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh is the reason that the Jets make moves in free agency on defense, and he's the reason that, you know, certain draft prospects are targeted on defense. Basically, when the Jets draft a defensive player, my assumption is that it's Robert Saleh's decision. You don't really have that same kind of fluid structure on offense. It's kind of all over the place. Obviously, you've had multiple different offensive systems while Robert Saleh has been here. That's part of the reason why, because Mike LaFleur looking for different players than Nathaniel Hackett. I like to see Robert Saleh getting involved on offense more, because I think it could at least, you know, bring some fluidity to the offense. And you know, obviously it's always nice to have an extra mind in there. And obviously when you know one side of the ball so well, it shouldn't be too much of a stretch to say that if Robert Saleh knows defense as well as he does, that can help him give input on offense. Like, he should at least know, it's like a know your enemy type of situation, right? And I know a lot of people or a lot of players who have played both offensive and defensive line will say it, that if they're an offensive lineman and they have experience playing defensive line, it really helps them if they're transitioning to offensive line, because they know what their opponent is looking for. They know what you know, matches up well. And I think Robert Saleh could be the same way in this situation. So I'm not really concerned about the quotes. I don't really care what he has to say about Nathaniel Hackett, but I am happy to see that he's getting more involved with the offense. And I know Aaron Rodgers said that as well, that Saleh is going to be more involved with the offense. So that's cool with me. I give that a thumbs up.
The thing with Saleh is, I know what he wants the offense to look like. And it's tough because he's, you know, how there's big picture people and then there's doers and there's, you know, the ideas guy and the, you know, put it into place guy.
Yeah.
Offensively, Sal's actually on both sides. Sal's an idealist about what he wants his defense to look like.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, the thing is on defense, he picked really good, practical people, Ulbrich, Tony Oden, even some of the personnel guys that, you know, helped draft some of the defensive players, Sauce, Tremaine Johnson. To implement it, he knows what he wants to do offensively. I think he wants it to basically just be what Shanahan does with the Niners now. That's why he hired LaFleur. Now it's a little different because of Aaron Rodgers, but still a Shanahan-y thing. Hackett comes from the tree. What he wants it to be what Rodgers had in Green Bay with Matt LaFleur. He wants another LaFleur offense. He just doesn't have the brain power or the talent around him, I think, to properly implement that vision. Now, he can say what he wants to have happen all he wants, but if he doesn't have the right coaches around him, i.e. Hackett, all these Titans guys who just got fired from Mike Vrabel staff, then I don't care how much more of an interest you take in the offense. I always compare him to Brian Billick in both a good and a bad way, because Brian Billick, when he was a coach with the Vikings, he was the offensive coordinator, that was 30 points a game, and Warren Moon and Randy Moss and Chris Carter and chucking deep or throwing bombs. Like, it was an insane offense. Then he gets to the Ravens. He was the coach of the 2000 Ravens when they won the Super Bowl. And those offenses were horrible. They were boring, but he took a greater interest in what the defense looked like. And those defenses became legendary, and the offense just came, hey, give Jamal Lewis the ball 30 times. So at least I like him for that way, because he's showing what Saleh can be and that he should be adaptable. And he should figure out, you know what, just because you're a defensive guy, you don't have to only coach defense. You could be good at both. Brian Billick was good at both. The problem, though, is it seemed like the thing that happened with those Ravens teams was the defense would be good and the offense was terrible, and the offense would be okay and the defense a bit. Like, it would always go out of whack. Is that going to happen on the defense now because Saleh's not paying as much attention to it? Because
I don't think so. I don't
know. They're not going to be bad, but like.
Yeah. Well, look, the defense
is. Go from two to, like, I don't know, 9 or 10.
I think the defense is talented enough, even though I don't love that the plan that they've had in place, a pass rusher this offseason. Like, and I think there's some questions about the run defense, although I think some of the issues that people have with the run defense were a little overblown. Like, I think the Jets technically ranked like 25th in terms of rushing yards allowed, but yards per carry was like 9th or 10th. Like, they weren't that bad against the run, not nearly as bad as people make it out to be.
Well, the problem is just because they had such a great pass defense. They had to move the ball somehow.
And because they were trailing in a lot of games, and teams would consistently run the ball because of that.
But they weren't always getting blown out. They were trailing 9-6 because of Zach Wilson. So.
Right. I also think another thing about coaches that I feel like it's overlooked a lot is that just like players are developing when they come into the league, coaches are also developing, and they're continuing to grow, Mike. They are continuing to grow.
If you're a head coach, though, I feel like you should be a little bit of a finished product, right?
Oh, I disagree. I think you grow as a coach. Yeah. Being a head coach is very different than being a coordinator. If you're a first-year head coach, if you compare a first-year head coach, like Bill Belichick's a perfect example, right? You compare Bill Belichick, his first head coaching stint, to what he did with the Patriots. It's completely different. Obviously, very different external factors as well, but I'm sure even he would agree that when he was with the Browns and when he was with the Patriots, he was a very different coach, and he was a much better coach, and he learned a lot with experience, and that happens. And unfortunately, head coaches in the NFL don't really get the opportunity to develop and grow as many players do. But I think Robert Saleh has gotten more of an opportunity than a lot of coaches would, with some really bad records. I don't think a lot of coaches would have survived the record that he's had through, what is this now, three? He's going on his fourth year with the Jets. Same goes for Joe Douglas as well. So I think it has been a learning experience, and I think he has been growing, and you like to hope that he continues to develop as a head coach. And I think that next step for him is getting more involved with the offense and having some input on both the personnel decisions that they make on the offense side of the ball and the schematic decisions, because those both matter. And obviously, your offense coordinator stinks. Like, we don't have to beat around the bush. Nathaniel Hackett is not a good offense coordinator. I don't care if he's growing still, what he's done to this point, and he has a long track record to show. I mean, he's been an offense coordinator in the league for – I mean, well over a decade. Like, it's
and his dad was a coach, and he basically was groomed to be a coach his whole life. I mean,
right. When you have 15 years of coordinator and coaching experience in the NFL,
that's and head coaching experience,
right? That's when I'm like, all right, you're probably not growing so much. But Robert Saleh's been a head coach now for 3 years, is going on his fourth year. It's fair to say he's still learning some things about being a head coach and still continuing to develop, especially because he's had a lot of, I would say, revolving door, at least on offense. So it's been hard for him to learn that side of the ball. But I'm happy to see him doing that. I would love to see him continuing to grow because I do really like Robert Saleh. I do think not only is he a great defensive mind, but I do think he's a great leader. And a lot of the players obviously look up to him, and he's held in high regard around the league. The question just comes down to, can he be an all-around head coach? And obviously, can he get the offensive play that he's been looking for? Can he get the quarterback play that he has not had in his career? Because that's been the biggest thing, I think, holding back not only Robert Saleh, but obviously the Jets, is the quarterback play. I know that is not a bold statement, but, you know.
Now, one last press conference tidbit I want to touch on before we get to some extra storylines. Sauce Gardner. Now, one of the – I don't want to even call it a criticism, because criticism implies that it's a broader analysis of his game, that, you know, here's something he could improve on, where if you were to look at game – like, there's really no – I don't want to just say he's the perfect cornerback, but is there, like, a glaring flaw in his game?
Other than he's not the best tackler in the world.
You know who wasn't the best tackler in the world? Deion Sanders.
And his ball skills can be better. Like, he's not Marcus Peters. He's not Deion Sanders, but whatever. You know, like, again, it's nitpicking. He's the best cornerback in the world currently.
Yeah, so. And then every single sort of data you look at, analytics, old school, film, everything will tell you that. So there are a couple of – I've seen a lot of Pat Surtain talk on here. Let's cool it down a little. You good?
They never are. There's no argument with actual statistical evidence that can back that up. And I love Pat Surtain. He's a great player.
But or film evidence or anything.
Right, exactly.
So vibes, fear, aura, whatever the kids are saying nowadays. I think that's the new term.
The man's name is Sauce. What more aura do you need?
Exactly. Your guy got a nickname for a first name? So there you go. Yeah,
exactly.
But
Sauce versus Pat. Get out of here.
So looking at Sauce, there was one of the criticisms that had been lobbed against him on NFL Twitter, which, you know, is the peak of enlightened sports writing and the peak of dialogue, and we're all the best. It's like that old photo of Plato and, is it Aristotle or Socrates? I think it's Socrates.
I thought you meant Plato, and I was like, what?
Oh, God, the Malaysian heat fried your brain. This is going to be an awful rest of the podcast.
I was like, what photo of Plato are you talking about?
Oh, my God, he almost... See, now because he almost died in Indonesia, now he's delirious. So now I got to deal with this.
I was dehydrated, all right? I'm so glad. Like, every time I drink water now, I'm like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever had.
You had to get helped up the stairs to get in here, man. This is brutal. So it's that sort of dialogue, talking about Sauce. They always say, well, he doesn't travel a lot, which I retort in my enlightened, you know, Greek philosopher tradition, shut up. Who cares?
Nice.
Doesn't matter. Richard Sherman didn't. A lot of great cornerbacks don't. It's how the scheme works. You don't really travel. And the scheme is great. Ideally, you'd want the scheme to change as little as possible because it was so amazing last year. Good players to implement it too, but that's 2 years in a row now where it's worked. And it's probably the only reason I think Saleh still has a job, is because everybody loves this scheme and his defense. So you'd think it would be working well. Now they come out and say, well, Sauce might travel a little bit more. This year, what was the Saleh quote that he said? Where he was like, that, it might happen more than it did last year.
He said it's a possibility that he will travel. He said it won't be exclusive, but it might happen more than last year. And given that it really didn't happen at all last year, he's basically saying it might happen this year.
Exactly. Like, looking at that, that to me is something I wouldn't get too alarmed about. That to me just says it's either trying to throw people off the scent, or what he means is if they're playing a game and it's the third quarter, and Stephon Diggs or whoever has six catches for 60-something yards on DJ Reed, they're going to go, hey, Sauce, go get him. Right. That, to me, is what that says, because the scheme works great. Sauce still ends up matched up with the top corners all the time, or his top receivers all the time, and he does well against them. So I don't really think that's I'll believe it when I see it. Kind of thing, because I just don't think Robert Saleh would take one of the main tenets of his defense, that there's left cornerbacks and right cornerbacks, because they have different plays, they have different footwork, they have different everything. It's people think it's easy to just go from one side to the other in football. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different language. That's why people don't go left tackle to right tackle too often.
It's Madden brain,
where you can just move guys around. Not that easy in real life. So, I mean, Sauce could do it if they wanted him to, but I just don't think it'll be a big part of the Jets' game plan.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't take what he said. I know Sauce Gardner had also alluded to this earlier in the year. I believe it was on, I think, Ryan Clark's podcast, where he said that that he was might be traveling this year. I think this is a situation where Sauce specifically went to Robert Saleh and said, hey, I would like to do this. I am offering this, and I'm saying that I can travel, and I would love to cover opposing team's number one receivers. And I think Robert Saleh and the Jets defensive coaching staff probably listened to him and were like, you know what? Maybe this is something we can implement. I don't think they're going to do any kind of wholesale changes to their defensive scheme. But I do like that Saleh's not showing like extreme rigidity here. Like he's not rigid in his plans and saying, hey, we have to do it this way. He's like, look, we have an all-world talent at cornerback. We have the best cornerback in the NFL. And if the situation calls for it, we can have him shadow an opposing team's wide receiver. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, I don't think it's going to be anything where we see any kind of significant changes with the defensive coach, with the defensive scheme. And I'm with you, Mike, where I say I believe it when I see it, because I'm not going to go into the year expecting them. Like, who do they? I should know this. I paid so little attention to the schedule release. Who do the Jets play week one again?
49ers,
right. So it's not going to be a situation where, I mean, that's a weird situation because
then they get the Titans after that, so we might need to go over to D-Hop. But
right, maybe he'll be shadowing D-Hop, but it's different because obviously Ayuk and Debo are assuming they're both still there at that point. I think Ayuk would be declared the wide receiver one at this point. So maybe, you know, that's a different situation because there's not really a defined, like, definitely number one receiver, and then a bunch of guys who aren't as good after him. Like they play the Cardinals this year, right? Maybe, you know, there's a situation where you stick him on Marvin Harrison Jr., right? Because they don't really have anyone else that you're super worried about. But I wouldn't think going into that game that that's going to be the game plan. It's kind of going to be a touch and go situation. The other part of this that my long-term brain is thinking about, and I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself here, but part of me thinks that them opening up this possibility might have something to do, and I don't want to speak this into existence, might have something to do with DJ Reed maybe leaving after the year. Because, of course, he is set to be a free agent at the end of the season. I don't know if they're going to extend him. There's a lot of talk that the Jets might let him walk after this year, which is a conversation I'm sure we'll talk about a lot over the coming
better not.
8 months, 7 months, whatever it's going to be.
I want this cornerback tandem with him and Carr. I want them together.
I know.
The wheels fall off.
It is a great cornerback trio. It'll really obviously depend what DJ Reed's market is, but obviously you got to pay Sauce Gardner. I think they're going to pay Michael Carter II because I don't think his market will be nearly as high as DJ Reed, because for whatever reason, slot corners just are not respected in the same way the outside corners are. And I don't think that that's going to change with Michael Carter's contract. So I think they keep them. You know, obviously you got to re-sign guys like Garrett Wilson, like Jermaine Johnson, like Breece Hall. So it's going to be a conversation. It's going to be a conversation. I would not say it's a lock right now that DJ Reed is kept around. And maybe this is a situation where they're going forward and they're like, maybe next year we don't have this amazing cornerback duo. And maybe next year we will consider, you know, next year meaning 2025, maybe then we'll consider Sauce Gardner shadowing opposing receivers a little bit more. And this is kind of like a little bit of a test run. I don't think that that's the primary motivation, but I can see that being a thought in the back of their heads of, well, let's see if he can do it. Let's see how this works with our defense. Again, I don't want to speak that into existence. I would love for the Jets to extend DJ Reed. I've said that they should have done it already this offseason and created cap space that way, but I don't think it's a lock that he's back, and maybe this is a situation where they're kind of giving it a little bit of a trial run and seeing how it works if they don't have two Pro Bowl all-pro corners in their defense.
I just hope this isn't another Woody thing. Like, do you remember how that report came out where Woody Johnson was scrolling Twitter and he's like, hey, Robert Saleh, people on Twitter say this, you should implement it. And then Saleh got pissed at him. Like,
if anything, I think it's more Sauce reading Twitter than Woody.
Yeah, maybe that. Well, he's like, yeah, and he's getting in his head about it. Like,
I think if anything,
he's a very online guy. He will not log off.
When you are that level of a competitor, you want to be the very best. You want to be the best of the best, and you want to play the best of the best.
And you're a cornerback where half the position is ego. Exactly. It's like being a boxer.
A corner is as mano a mano as any position in football. Like that wide receiver, and then of course, if you're going like left tackle, edge rusher, or something like that. But that's about as mano to mano as it gets. I think Sauce Gardner, I 100% think it's a situation where he went to Robert Saleh and the coaching staff and said, I want to do this. And then the Jets heard him out. I really think that's what had happened. I don't think Saleh went to Sauce and said this. I think Sauce went to Saleh.
I could definitely see that happening because we've mentioned this before about how they look for like narcissists and like crazy sociopaths when they're trying to find fighter pilots. Cause they're like, yeah, I know I got to fly through 10 enemy planes, but I'm me and I'm awesome and I'll be fine. Like you need that out of your cornerbacks.
Yep. You need that out of wide receiver and corner. That's
especially corner. moving on to some of the storylines to watch, or at least maybe some of the position battles, I think could be another good way to frame it. Obviously, Rodgers is going to be the main thing because, again, to quote Tom Moore when he was talking about why Jim Sorge, who was Peyton Manning's longtime backup, didn't get a lot of practice reps. He goes, if 18 goes down, we're fucked, and we don't practice that. So if 8 goes down, that's it for him. So as good as Tyrod Taylor is, I mean, let's be real here. But outside of that, the storyline that I'm really looking at, like really intensely, because I've discussed this guy on the show in the last couple of weeks, I think more than I would care to considering his performance, but I'm looking at Alan Lazard in the wide receiver room specifically, because supposedly in the first couple of days of OTAs, Lazard's been okay again. And obviously having Aaron Rodgers, number one, and not having Zach Wilson, number two, those two things in tandem are going to help any wide receiver. I don't care who you are. Especially if you're Alan Lazard, who, my God, does he need something positive to happen after what ungodly mess last year was. But and I'm looking at him so intensely because I think there's a legitimate shot that he might be wide receiver three. Because now, Garrett Wilson, we talk about moving guys around a lot. I know they probably don't want to pigeonhole Garrett Wilson in the slot. But I'm looking at their depth chart because right now the battle for wide receiver three is Alan Lazard versus Malachi Corley. And I would like Corley to play right away. I think he can play right away in the slot. I think right now he's going to be able to break tackles at the NFL level. I like his hand. Like, there's a lot of good stuff about Corley. I'd want to see him play right away. I don't want to be another Jets mid-round wide receiver that just wastes away into nothing on the bench. I don't want that to happen to him. But this team has shown at pretty much every turn, until they're forced to, they'll play the veteran over the young guy. And there's a lot less Aaron Rodgers buddies on this team last year. Except if it's Zach Wilson. He's the one. But there's a lot less, you know, sign Aaron Rodgers buddies this year. There's no Randall Cobb. They haven't gone after David Bakhtiari. But they're really kind of moving away from that. But the one guy left is Lazard, who's still, like, in a place where he could possibly play. So I think there's a chance if he impresses in the spring or and the summer, both of those seasons, if he impresses, that the Jets go, you know what, let's go with the veteran guy. Like, maybe Corley will overtake him later. Obviously, the plan is for Corley to overtake him by year two, because they pretty much said they're going to cut Lazard after this year. They've openly said that.
Yeah.
So the plan could have been, well, we'll put him on ice, and then year two will be ready. But I think there's a legitimate chance that Corley gets knocked out of a starting role, because there could be some trepidation over, well, can he run a full route tree and all that. So keep your eye on Lazard. He may not be totally dead and buried.
I would almost go as far as to say that my prediction is that Alan Lazard will be wide receiver three. That I feel confident saying that. I'm not saying
Garrett to the slot or
yeah, and they'll play Garrett. I mean, they'll move them all around. Also, Mike Williams is not a lock to be ready for week one. And you know, he's not gonna be ready until probably the set around, like, the hope right now is he's ready around the same time Breece Hall was ready. So there's also that to be to consider. And, you know, I'm not sure Mike Williams is going to play 17 games this year. So that's another thing to consider. I think Alan Lazard's going to play. Like, he's not going to just be riding the bench. He's going to play this year. And I expect him to be better, because I cannot imagine.
You have to be. There's no way you can be worse.
I cannot imagine him being worse. Like, a lot of the issues that I had with the signing, because I was not a fan of the signing at the time, they definitely popped up in his first year of the Jets, but nobody could have predicted he'd be as bad as he was.
He was not this in Green Bay.
No, he was not that in Green Bay. He did have the drop issues. He did have some issues separating, right? Like, what he showed on tape in 2023 was some of the worst tape I've seen from a wide receiver in years. Like, he was statistically, by pretty much every metric, the worst wide receiver in football that at least played.
And he started out okay, actually. Like,
he started okay. He was okay. And then it's just...
And then just it was like the Charger game or the Raider game. That was the beginning of the end.
It tanked. But all hope is not lost. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is back. That is massive for him, because the only time he's ever produced in his career has been with Aaron Rodgers. And I'd like to point out, like, there have been guys in recent memory with the Jets who have had really bad starts to their career with the team and have turned the reputation around a little bit. I mean, C.J. Mosley is obviously the most example, or the most important example, or the most, you know, prominent example of someone doing this. Now, I don't think Alan Lazard is going to have a C.J. Mosley turnaround. I don't think he's going to be an all pro, and I don't think he's going to be around long enough to have that type of a turnaround. But even someone like Corey Davis, who was very bad in his first season with the Jets. Like, I thought that first season with the Jets was probably the worst year of his career to that point. He came back in his second year and was better. Like, it wasn't enough. Unfortunately, he ended up getting hurt again, and, you know, it wasn't enough to completely change that reputation. But I think if he stayed healthy for that entire year, I think Jets fans would have thought about him a little bit differently going into 2023, of course, he ended up retiring and now unretiring. But yeah, you know, I thought he was decent in that second year with the Jets, and I thought he was a fine third option. And I think Alan Lazard can still be that. I think Alan Lazard can be a fine, you know, with the Jets, especially because you got Tyler Conklin and Breece Hall as well. You don't even need Alan Lazard to be your third option. Ideally, he's your fifth option, you know, at that, because you have Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, Tyler Conklin, Breece Hall. Alan Lazard is your fifth option. Malachi Corley, fifth, sixth, whatever. I think he can still be that. And I would not be surprised at all if he is your wide receiver three over Corley, for the reasons that you said, whether it's, you know, they have issues with him, you know, running the right routes. I know there was an anecdote I saw from Tuesday's practice where Corley ran the wrong route and Aaron Rodgers had to go over to him and explain it to him, talk to him about it. Obviously, it's early. It's May. That's to be expected for a guy who's learning a new offense. So that's not exactly a red flag raiser. But yeah, there are still some concerns about his route tree coming into the NFL. So I would not be surprised at all if Alan Lazard is wide receiver three over Malachi Corley. And like you said, Mike, it gives you the flexibility to move Garrett Wilson to the slot, to move him around. I think we're going to see all four of those wide receivers play. It'll just be, you know, I guess how they divvy up the snaps. We'll see. But I do think we'll see all of them play.
The other thing I'm looking at too, I don't know about you, but on the defensive side of the ball.
Sure.
It seems like they're having a three-way competition for two spots at the safety position.
Yeah.
Because Jordan Whitehead is gone. He went back to Tampa, right, Whitehead?
Yes. Yes, he did. And Bucs fans are hyped. Bucs fans are hyped.
Oh, yeah. That's apparently he was only
I'll say it this way. I think players or fan bases treat players very differently if they are homegrown. Jordan Whitehead has his flaws, right? He was a very similar player with the Jets than he was with the Bucs. But when you're homegrown, you are just treated a lot differently than if you're signed as a free agent.
See Wilson, Zach. Now, and moving on.
Sure. Although Broncos fans are already getting hyped on Zach Wilson. So
why? He's never going to be the backup.
Former number two overall pick. Sean Payton can fix him. That's the rationale.
He hasn't fixed anybody. Whatever.
Put yourself in their shoes.
He doesn't fix people. Drew Brees was just good.
I agree.
Eddie, moving on. So the three contenders are Chuck Clark, Tony Adams, and Ashton Davis. Adrian Amos is on the Texans now, right?
I don't think he was, but I don't think he re-signed. I think he's
didn't bring him back.
I think he's a free agent still. Yeah, he's a free agent.
Well, RIP Adrian Amos, you stunk. Yep.
No. I would say they could bring him back, but I don't think it ended on very good terms. So
yeah, he was bad. So
he was fine. He barely played.
It wasn't good enough to beat out some of these other guys. But anyway, so looking at these three guys, it's funny because they all have different styles to a degree. And it'll be interesting to see what the Jets, and honestly, none of them seem like honestly great fits for the Jets, because they want safeties to hang back and cover a lot of ground. It's a lot of too high, hang back and cover ground. Like, look at what San Francisco does. They want to be what, you know, Jalen Pitre does in Houston.
Mm-hmm. They like versatile safeties. They want guys who could kind of do a little bit of everything. I think Tony Adams is probably the best fit for that.
Hufanga in San Francisco, or you're either hanging back or you're blitzing. It seems like those are what they do with their safeties primarily.
Yep.
And Chuck Clark is really good, I think, around the line of scrimmage. Hard hitter, leader. Before the Jets, he never missed a freaking game because of injury, and then he blows out his leg immediately.
Yep. In OTAs.
You think he'd be healthy now.
In OTAs.
The concern that I have is older defensive back coming off a leg injury. I mean, there's not a great history of success there. When so much of your game is on speed and quickness, I have my concerns about Chuck Clark. Then you go to Tony Adams, who he was really bad, I think, to start the year. He was really, really bad after an offseason. He got better near the end. He improved near the end. He showed some good range, showed some playmaking ability, but I just don't know which Tony Adams I'm getting. Am I getting first half or second half Tony Adams? Because first half Tony Adams is a practice squad guy, and second half is pretty good.
Yeah.
So do you want to be in to be one of the starters on a championship defense? And then the third one, Ashton Davis, I know he's got this reputation of him being a pretty good playmaker, and he has gotten a lot better since he started. He was not very good early on with the Jets. He's improved a lot. I'm actually surprised he didn't get like a starting offer elsewhere in free agency and he had to come back to the Jets. But I mean, they had opportunities to put him in the starting lineup beforehand, and he never really broke in. He made some plays when he was in there, but he never really had that breakout moment. So is he going to have it this year? Why would he? He didn't beforehand. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the safety room. Like, and that's, I think, the weakest spot on this defense. I know you didn't like some of the you specifically didn't like some of the defensive line moves, but it's still an area of strength for this team because you got Cole and Jermaine Johnson. Safety is the area of weakness, and I'm not sure that we really have a starting safety duo yet.
I think I feel better about the safety room now than I did a year ago. And I think the reason for that is honestly finances. Like, for what the Jets are paying their safeties right now, I think they're getting incredible value. I think the three of Clark, Davis, and Adams combined are like making like $3 or $4 million combined this year between three players who are like, I would call, I mean, Clark, if he's Chuck Clark of old, is a starting caliber player. I don't know what he's going to be. So I'll say right now, below average to fringe starting caliber safeties. And you're getting all three of them combined for like $3 to $4 million. That's really, really good value. And I see the vision with all three players. Tony Adams, like you said, improved a lot as the year went on. I don't know if I'd say he was a practice squad guy early in the year, but I don't think he was a starting caliber safety to begin the year. And by the end of the year, I was like, you know what? I see the development here. I think he's a below average starting safety who is making strides and getting better. And that's what you want to see for a guy who was an undrafted rookie just 2 years ago. I mean, last year he was unexpectedly thrust into that starting spot. I mean, nobody expected him to be a starter next year or last year. He only was a starter because Chuck Clark got hurt. And they brought in Adrian Amos and Tony Adams beat him out for the starting job. So they didn't go into that last year thinking Tony Adams would be the starter. So now he has another extra offseason to prepare going into the year, assuming that he's going to be a starter. Because I do think Tony Adams, of the three, is probably the most likely to be locked into a starting job. I think the Jets are very high on him. And, of course, he is still young. He's still on that rookie undrafted contract. So he's there for very, very cheap. Then I would say I see the vision with Chuck Clark. I saw the vision when they made that move. That was probably my favorite move that the Jets made all of last offseason, outside of, course, trading for Aaron Rodgers. I thought that the Chuck Clark trade was a brilliant move by Joe Douglas. They got him for, what was it, a future seventh or whatever?
Nothing.
It's very unfortunate that he had that torn ACL and that, you know, I'd like to think he's had basically a year now to prepare. By the time September comes around, it'll be over a year that he suffered the ACL. And there is a stronger track record of guys coming back from ACLs now that there has been, you know, in the last 20 years. If you go back like 15 years ago, I'd feel differently, but you still don't know. Every player recovers differently. And it's not like Chuck Clark is necessarily young at this stage. He's not old, but what is he? 29, I would say, probably seems about right. 28.
Chuck Clark is. Are you willing to bet on it?
I looked it up. He's 29.
I was right.
He's 29. he's not necessarily young per se, but he's not old. So I see the vision there with him. I think he can absolutely be the leader of the group because that's what he was in Baltimore. I mean, he was their defensive play caller for a little bit with the Ravens. Like he was a highly regarded leader both in the locker room and on the field with the Ravens. So I could see him, hopefully, if he can return to form and be the player he was before injury, I could see him being that player. And if he is that player with the Jets, he absolutely needs to be starting alongside Tony Adams. And he should be a guy who's playing pretty much every defensive snap. I mean, if it's up to me, I think Chuck Clark's a really, really good player. So hopefully he can return. And I also see the vision with Ashton Davis because, look, Ashton Davis is somebody who I think a lot of people were surprised that he even made it to his fourth year with the Jets, that he even made it to the end of his rookie contract with the Jets because, you know, there was a time I even going into last summer where I thought he was going to get cut, where he was on the chopping block. And the only reason he even wasn't cut, the only reason he even made it to this point was because of his special teams contributions, because he is a favorite of Brant Boyer and because he can contribute on special teams. But as far as his defensive impact, I mean, there was none until this season. Like until this past season, there was no positive defensive impact. I know he had some run as a rookie and, you know, after that, he kind of played sparingly. He didn't really – 2022, he was used – like, he wasn't even used at all. I think he had, like, 13 defensive snaps all year in 2022.
That is correct.
Was I right?
He's exactly correct, 13.
Dude, look at me. My brain is still here. Malaysia didn't kill me.
A steel cage.
I'm still remembering some stuff. I swear I don't have that pulled up in front of me. I just remember that.
Sure you don't.
I didn't check March from our friend's page. I did not have Ashton Davis page pull up. But yeah, I see the vision with Ashton Davis as well because he made plays last year. Like some of it was right place, right time. Like, you know, we talk playmaker. Okay, sure. He recovered two or three fumbles. Right place, right time. Like that's not something. It's not like there's really a particular skill to recovering fumbles. It kind of just is right place, right time. But he was there for some interceptions. He was there, I believe. Actually, I don't know if he forced a fumble, but he had some timely interceptions. He had a knack for making the big play. He
three of them.
Three interceptions. There you go. He was constantly in the right spot. And genuinely, even aside from the playmaking, even aside from that stuff, I thought that he was just better overall. I thought he was a more consistent player in coverage, specifically when he was finally given a start. I believe he started, was it the last game of the year, I think, or he got a lot of run that last game of the year. He had, I believe he finished that week as PFF's highest graded safety in his only game that he played like a significant number of snaps. So he genuinely showed some significant improvement last year. So I see why they brought him back. And also, like, I know you said, oh, you know, you're surprised he didn't get a starting opportunity elsewhere. This kind of is his starting opportunity. Like, I think he's going to be given a chance to earn the starting job. That's what Robert Saleh said. I think he's clearly right now the third safety in the pecking order. But if he continues to improve and continues to make plays this summer, they're going to find ways to get him on the field. And as we saw last year, the Jets use three safeties a lot. They're going to get Ashton Davis on the field. Another guy who we haven't really talked about is Isaiah Oliver is making that transition to safety. So maybe they find ways to get him involved too. He was a cornerback before this.
Full transition or just like we'll try him at both spots?
You know, they said fully transitioning. That's what Jeff Ulbrich said. Ulbrich said that they're fully moving him to safety.
Wasn't a good cornerback, so let's try this out.
Right. I mean, he was fine. Like, he played, I think, 49.
I think part of the problem is he got picked so high, so he looks worse. And he was like
He was a first-round pick, so now everyone is like – or he was a first-round pick or second?
He was a second. Then the Falcons had him.
Yeah, second-round picks. Everyone expected bigger things. He played – I think, again, I'm not looking this up. I think it was 49% of snaps with the 49ers last year. I think I remember that because 49. Am I right on that?
If you get this right, I'm going to flip my freaking lid.
Am I right on that? Am I right? It was really
last
close.
Last year, what number did you say?
I said 49.
46.
It was close. Yeah. So he was a guy who was playing significant snaps for a really good defense last year. So,
but also, the secondary was their worst area last year, too.
It was. And he wasn't necessarily great, but he's not bad. Like, he's definitely a really good depth piece. And I think he is, you know, I don't know. I would say he's an upgrade over Bryce Hall if he was sticking at corner, strictly because he can play special teams and Bryce Hall didn't. But it's interesting that they're moving him to safety. Maybe that means someone like Quantez Stiggers gets that run as the fourth or fifth corner. Obviously, you still have Brandon Echols too. But, yeah, I don't know. He's an interesting addition to the safety room because besides that, you know, I was, you know, the thought process going in was that fourth safety was Jarek Bernard Converse, Jalen Key, whoever was going to end up being, or maybe you bring in like a Justin Simmons or a Quandre Diggs. But now it sounds like, you know, if you have Ashton Davis, Chuck Clark, Tony Adams, Isaiah Oliver, you don't really need another safety. And I think that's a fine safety room, especially for what you're paying them. I'm fine. I'm very content with the Jets safety room. I think it could obviously be better, but for the value you're getting, I think it's pretty good.
What do you think about the running back room? Because in my mind, it's pretty set in stone already where Breece Hall's your one, Braylon Allen's your two. It was funny too. You know how they have that rookie premiere where they all, you know, wear the jerseys for the.
What is the? Can you explain to me what that is? Because I know it exists.
For Panini, the trading card company. So they take pictures to put on the trading cards.
Yeah, so it's just a photo shoot.
It's a photo shoot, yeah. And they typically will get. There's only usually a couple defensive players there every year. That's why. Yeah.
It's the
core usually get skill position players, and that's why there are third, fourth, fifth round picks that go there, and some first round picks don't.
Right. Like Jordan Travis is there, but Olafishon is not.
Olafishon wasn't. Byron Murphy wasn't for the Seahawks. Right. I think there were Latu and Dallas Turner were there, and that was like it for defensive players. Of course. But Braylon Allen was there. And it was funny watching him because Joe Milton is 6'5", 235 for the Patriots, and Braylon Allen stood next to him, and he did not look smaller than
Allen's huge.
Well, he's a big dude. I think he's number two.
That is a 20-year-old man. He's 20.
He's been a linebacker for a while.
He is 20 years old and he's that big. That's crazy. Like, that's wild.
And then you have Isaiah Davis, I think, at three, because when you pick two running backs in that quick succession, that to me is a very loud signal that they don't believe a lot in Israel Abanikanda. We mentioned why in the past, where, you know, I liked his speed coming out of Pitt, I liked his playmaking. The concern was obviously the pass protection because he didn't really do that much at Pitt, and when he did it, he was not very good. And when he got some run with the Jets, he didn't really look amazing, and obviously was a poor pass protector.
And the ball security.
And remember that special teams play? It was with the Browns game, and then you called out. You called him out for a special teams. Kenny Bowie was like, "No, you called out Kenny Yeboah."
I called out Kenny Bowie as a joke. Kenny
Actually, he messed up.
Right, I jokingly called out Kenny Yeboah, being like, "Oh yeah, like." I forget what I had said. Like he malfunctioned or he didn't block for his, I think I said he hates his Izzy Vanacana because he didn't block. Like it was a joke. Obviously it was a joke. And it was
no, he actually screwed up.
Right. It was also very clearly a miscommunication. Like I wasn't actually saying Kenny Yeboah had fucked up. But yeah, Kenny Yeboah was like, yeah, no, it was actually Izzy Vanacana's fault. Clearly there was, I'm glad you bring that up because there was some stuff with that. The Jets coaching staff didn't trust him.
And I feel, see, to me, there's going to be a competition between, I think, Abanacanda and Isaiah Davis specifically.
Yeah.
But I feel like if it's all even, I feel like they're going to go with Davis. He's the bigger back. He's the more powerful back. He's the better pass protector. He didn't catch a lot in college. I feel like if he has some potential there, I liked his vision, but I feel like it's more set in stone to me. I don't see a ton of competition here. I feel like, because everybody knows that 1 and 2 are set up, I think, with Hall and Allen.
I don't know. I think there's a genuine competition here. I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be a little surprised if Izzy was RB2, but I wouldn't be shocked. Like I wouldn't be stunned if he ended up being RB2 because a lot can change in the summer. You know, we all forget Izzy Vanacana was also 20 years old when he was drafted. He was very young. And, you know, as down as I was on him after his rookie season, you know, I did like him as a prospect. And I think that there is definitely still some room for improvement. I think he can still have a role with the Jets. It's telling that they drafted two running backs because it's clear that they don't trust Izzy Vanacana, which they shouldn't, and they clearly didn't trust him last year. But I wouldn't be stunned. I wouldn't be stunned if he carved out a role. And I think for him, the big thing to be special teams. Like I think that's going to be huge for him because I saw some of the names that were getting the kick return opportunities. You know, it's the guys you'd expect, like Xavier Gibson, but he was one of them. I think it was Xavier Gibson, Malachi Corley, Izzy Abanacanda, and then some undrafted guys, Tyler Harrell, and then a couple of the guys they just signed after minicamp. But Abanacanda is one of those guys. And if he can make an impact as a punt returner, as a kick returner, if they trust him in that role, then not only is he going to have a spot on the roster, because that's not a guarantee right now, but he might end up being able to carve out a role in offense because he does offer something that the other guys don't. Like he has that breakaway speed. And Braylon Allen isn't really going to give you that breakaway speed. Isaiah Davis isn't going to give you that breakaway speed. Obviously, of course, Breece Hall does. But Vanacanda does offer something that the others don't. So as much as I don't think he's going to beat out Braylon Allen and maybe not even Isaiah Davis, I wouldn't say it's set in stone. I think it's May right now. A lot can change. A lot can happen. Who knows how the running back competition is going to shake out. It should be very interesting.
I mean, I think it'll be interesting. Maybe I'm just in on the Braylon Allen hype. Too much though. I just really think he's going to be a really good prospect. Hey, and
you were in on the Izzy Abanacanda hype last year, so
it hurts me because I feel like everybody has areas where they're good evaluating talent and bad evaluating talent. Running back for a while was my sweet spot. Running back, I was in on Aaron. I had Aaron Jones like a second round grade in my first ever big board. I did. I've been in on a lot of guys that and sometimes corner. Like I had Tariq Woolen as like a top 40 player. So
running back feels like. That. Other than like offensive line, running back feels like the hardest position group to analyze because it's just so difficult to separate the external factors from a running back. Like it's so hard.
It's easy for me though, just because like their running style largely doesn't change depending on where they're lined. Like you still get guys who run hard. Like even if you have a good line, some guys run hard. Some guys are too patient. Some guys have bad vision. Like Trent Richardson had good lines and terrible lines and he ran the same badly. He just had one time he had a good line and one time he didn't.
That's why you see so many mid-round running backs hit because it's just so difficult to actually evaluate the position group. Like,
some guys just have outdated schemes where.
I mean, Isaiah Pacheco was a seventh round pick. I don't think anybody expected him to be a very good NFL running back.
Well, yeah, but that's Andy Reid's churned out how many good running backs over the years.
Sure, but also Pacheco.
If you go to Adam Gase, what's Adam Gase's running back legacy?
Yeah, but again, watch Pacheco at Rutgers. I don't think anybody thought he would be this good.
I liked him a little bit just because he had that sort of Chris Ivory CTE style.
And that's the other thing. When I watch running backs on film, I end up liking almost all of them. I'm like, yeah, this guy's good. Like this guy can play. It's not like that with other positions, but with running back, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I can see it. I can see this dude being good in the NFL.
It's just that the 40 times Shimano put a ton of emphasis on for backs, unless you're an Aldrick Estime where you do everything right except that.
Right.
Then that'll be a huge factor.
Look, I think Braylon Allen's going to be really good. I still wish the Jets drafted Estime with that pick. I still wish they did.
Allen's faster, though, and he's a little more wiggle to him. Estime is just one cut and here you go.
I'm more confident that Estime is going to be a good NFL player than Allen. That's not to say I don't think Allen's going to be good. And I think Allen might even have a higher ceiling because he's so young too. But I'm so confident that Audrey Gaston, fairly
where he went. He went to Denver, so.
Right. And I think that's going to be a good landing spot for him.
He's going to throw the ball a lot, power guy, a lot of shotgun runs.
He's going to – wait, is Samaje Perine still there?
You might, but Javonte Williams is still there too.
All right, Perine's still there. I think Estime can take over. I think Estime can take over that Perine role. I think ideally that's what I would want. That's what I would like in Denver. But
this is not the Mile High Broncos podcast or whatever. This is the Jet Press podcast. So thank you guys for tuning into this episode of the Jet Press.
Whoa, Mike, are you sure Pat Surtain is not the best cornerback in the NFL?
I am dead sure. I am dead certain. And if you disagree, then take off the blue and orange pom-poms.
At least
we're having a real discussion.
We can both agree that Nathaniel Hackett is not very good at his job.
That's just like – that's not even like a debate topic. That's like saying, is the Pope Catholic? Yeah, Pope's Catholic. So, thank you guys for tuning into the Jet Press. As always, welcome Justin back from his international escapades halfway across the world. He is back and ready to go for our weekly shows. Thank you again. Also, another thank you to Mike Giraputo, who did a very good job guest hosting last week. As always, you can subscribe on all the platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Overcast, or get your podcasts. That's where we are. And we're on YouTube, the Jet Press. Justin, now that you're back, let's see if you remember the sign off.
I think I do. First, I'll give you a little quick shout out, Mike. I appreciate Mike Giraputo hopping on last week. It is good to be back. We should have some more content coming out pretty soon. Maybe some future interviews. We'll see. We definitely have a lot of shorts that have gone up. So if you like those Guess the Jets, or if you haven't checked them out, we also have some blind rankings that we've done. I think a Guess the Jet just went up right before we went live. And I think is it a blind ranking?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I think there's a Guess the Jet going out tomorrow that I may have embarrassingly got wrong, but you can check that out tomorrow.
That's not the new for Justin here.
there were some bad ones in our recent recording session that I'm still cringing about that I didn't get, but check those out. We have some of those, some fun ones, and maybe some other fun shorts ideas that might be popping up in the near future. So definitely check those out. But until next time, thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter @ByMikeLuchon. Follow me on Twitter @JustinTFreed. Follow the Jet Press @TheJetPress. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok, I guess, still, sure. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening to the Jet Press podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. We'll see you guys next time.
See you folks next week.
If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need Bill. Bill Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With Bill, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using Bill to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how Bill can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to Bill Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.